because we did not have any federal pass-through dollars and we did not have any state funding, we had to reduce our office hours. We had to close on Fridays. We actually had to eliminate 4 positions, lay off 5 people. 12 of us took 20% pay cuts. We did not replace 3 vacant positions, and we did not hire for the 2 new positions that were approved in the FY16 budget. So, for example, in FY15, we had 46 staff. Now we have 33 staff.
That's about a third.
Yes, and we also had to reduce operations. So for our 24-hour Neville House for domestic violence victims, we had to eliminate a shift. Now, we were still able to cover 24 hours on site, but what that means is that we're not able to do as much advocacy and as much education and as much support while families are at Neville House. Our Mayor's Manor permanent supportive housing, we actually had to eliminate a shift, so we're not able to have 24-hour on-site coverage. And for Mayor's Manor, that's important in our community for people who were homeless, who have a physical or mental disability.
Now, the federal pass-through dollars have begun to come back because after a while, the lawmakers passed that.
Yes, it has helped most definitely. For instance, in our LIHEAP program, we have seniors.
Low-income heating and energy assistance program.
Yes, low-income home energy assistance program. Absolutely, Charlie. In that program, in September, with state funds, we would have been able to help seniors who were over the age of 60 and people with disabilities with their utility bills. We were not able to do that until October, when the federal pass-through dollars were released. So these are individuals who are many times on a fixed budget, and as part of their budget are looking to us for that assistance, and it wasn't there in September. We were also unable in the beginning to help people weatherize their homes, which helps them reduce the energy costs to reduce those utility bills. We also were unable to help people through our community services block grant, which is traditionally people who are in need of rental assistance. They can maybe have the security deposit, but they need help with rent, or there's a situation in their life that has caused a crisis. Maybe it's a car breaking down and they're at risk of losing a job, or maybe a medical event has caused them to be without work for a longer period of time, and so they need some help.
And you're saying then that the lack of a state budget has increased the number of homeless in the Twin Cities because you can't help in this way.
I believe that is the case. I believe the organizations that have helped people who are in crisis, many organizations are in crisis themselves. Many of the staff in our social service organizations now have had to become the people needing the services. So this has been a downward spiral. Without a budget, we've actually created more people who need the safety net.
Tell me some of their stories, would you?
My heart goes out to people who are seniors, people who have disabilities, people who were homeless, people who are being affected in their home by domestic violence, whether that's financial exploitation or emotional abuse or physical abuse. And yes, that certainly does happen in McLean County to many adults and children. All of those individuals have been at risk of not having resources to help them. And with MCCA, we're all about helping people reach sufficiency, help people stabilize their life. And without resources, without a budget, it's hard for us to help people create a spending plan and increase their savings when from July and August and September, we didn't have that funding to do so.
Paint a picture of the financials. What's the total that the state cut you? You may have contracts that have been ratified but remain unpaid. How much does the state owe you? Mm-hmm. And how does that compare to your entire operation? Mm-hmm.
We are in a much better place now because of the federal pass-through dollars and because of the authorization for state low-income home energy assistance. In January, we were able to receive a state grant for our domestic violence emergency shelter. So that $300,000 was incredibly helpful. We remained open, but again, we couldn't provide as many services while people were there. So in January, we did receive our DHS grant award. I received an email this week that we will be receiving $17,000 for our Mayor's Manor permanent supportive housing. Now that's 50% less than last year. And that's, you know, we have been providing services since July.
As if you were going to get the whole amount.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what are you going to have to do then if that's the bottom line on this fiscal year, which ends in a month or so? What are you going to have to do in that 1 month?
That's a good question, Charlie. For our most recent financial statements, our projected grant revenue is $182,000 more than our actual grant awards that we've received. So that's where we have to, for instance, June 6th, we have a golf outing to drive out domestic violence and homelessness in our communities. So we're doing fundraisers. We feel like we can't cut anymore.
Many agencies have been living off their reserves. That is not feasible for every agency because some agencies don't have deep pockets or big donors. What is your situation?
Mm-hmm. We do have some operating reserves. However, we have not tapped into those yet, nor would we want to do so, because then it's putting us in a crisis situation and we're trying to help people become financially stable themselves. Another thing is that we applied for AmeriCorps Vistas, and we now have a green champion, and we are interviewing for an employment coach to complement our financial coaching. So again, we were being resourceful and innovative.
But grants often come with strings, so you're actually having to pivot the kinds of services you offer to something else. In many regards, that's a positive, but how are you getting away from core missions by doing that? Or is there that danger that you have to watch out for?
Our agency is very committed to focusing on our mission, which is to educate, equip, and empower people towards financially secure, violence-free lives. And that is the danger when you don't have the resources, or there might be other resources, but they don't fit the mission. But we've been fortunate to still be mission-driven through this challenge. I do empathize with my colleagues who are still owed hundreds of thousands of dollars for the services they have provided.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Deborah White, the Executive Director of Mid-Central Community Action in Bloomington Normal. Let's talk about those other agencies who have been forced to cut services and leave needs unfilled in the Twin Cities. Are you seeing greater demand because those agencies are not able to do the jobs they had been doing?
Absolutely. People who aren't able to get assistance with their utility bills, and they're not able to get child care, and they're not able to get help with transportation so that they can go to work and be a tax-paying citizen. And that spiral is so devastating. So absolutely, we actually had 500 calls on the first day that LIHEAP opened on October 1st. That gives you an indication of the need.
Let's go back to Neville House and Countering Domestic Violence. You've said you have not been able to do as much coaching or education of the people who come to Neville House to help them out. As we know, it takes 5 to 7 times for a person in an abusive situation to leave before it sticks, typically, before they permanently leave that situation. Has the lack of ability to offer services changed that number, made it higher? Has it resulted in unsafe situations persisting?
For our domestic violence program, we have kept the Neville House doors open, but what has suffered is especially our work with children and parents and the family unit together. Now, I want to make it clear that people can still call our hotline, 827-7070, and they can still bring their children to Neville House.
And there is still a shelter.
Yes.
It's open and it's 24/7.
Yes, and we will help their children through a lot of different therapeutic modalities get their feelings out about what they witnessed and what they saw. So I want people who are listening to know that there is still help available. We just didn't have as many hours to devote in depth to that because our youth advocate also had to answer the hotline.
What's the long-term implication for that thinning of service and that dilution of time spent with clients?
Well, we are still providing support groups for adults and children so that when they need to come back for that support, they're able to do that. What we have not been able to do is our economic empowerment groups. Some people may not realize this, but financial exploitation happens in 95% of domestic violence relationships. So that's a big deal. Now, luckily, the other part of our agency, we have Next Step, and it's a great program with financial incentives and financial coaching to help reach stability. But we have to help people address and understand the dynamics of domestic violence first, and the lethality and the escalation. One other example for our domestic violence program is that we did have 4 full-time advocates working in the criminal justice system with police and helping with orders of protection. We are still only have 2 full-time court advocates. Now, again, to listeners, yes, we can help with orders of protection, but we can't help with people who are walking in as much as we used to be able to do. We have to make appointments, etc.
And helping them follow through with the complex justice system that we have.
Absolutely. Taking the time it is as a crime victim, helping them understand and navigate this system. You know, they're not the perpetrator or offender, they're a crime victim. And
so there are more cracks for people to fall through.
Yes, yes.
We still have no state budget. We may not have a state budget when the fiscal year starts. That will depend, of course, on the lawmakers and the governor and their ability to get together on matters. How much is that uncertainty affecting you? Looking forward, what are you having to do because of this, of these unknowns?
We will be in the same place in July, August, and September for the participants and the community members who count on us and for our organization's staffing patterns if the federal pass-through dollars are not released. So what we are doing now is advocating and asking our governor to support a standalone budget. And of course, we would rather have the whole budget be passed, but at least federal pass-through funding will help people who are vulnerable populations in our community. So that's one thing that we're doing right now is advocating. Something else that is throwing a wrench into this for many of us in the social service field is the new overtime rules that are coming out with a threshold of $47,476 for exempt staff. So for us, that would affect 14 of our staff who are on call for our different programs. So that's another thing that we're factoring in. How do we do that?
That new overtime rule is to take effect in December.
Yes. We are currently preparing our FY17 budget. So we'll have to have a preferred budget, if you will, our contingency budget, and our worst case scenario budget.
What's the opportunity cost from having to think about all of these scenarios? It's taking time away from what?
That's a very good point for our legislators to understand, as well as our listeners. In July and August, we were doing cash flow projections, our director of finance, every week. Then it comes audit time. We're late for the audit. We have to work on that, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also the people that are affected, because people are calling in desperate situations of being evicted or, again, those life trauma situations that we've already talked about, Charlie, and there aren't the financial resources. There still is the education.
What have you had to tell people who call with those questions and say, help me?
Well, it's ironic that our MCCA tagline is here to help. That's why we started our practical money skills workshop. Because what we can do is help educate you and give you some tools until we can help with the actual financial resources. In general, all of us in the social service field have done more with less and more with less, and that's been our expectation. And with this budget impasse, we can no longer do that. That's why we had to cut hours, cut staff, cut services. We can't do that anymore.
Deborah White is the Director of Mid-Central Community Action. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Charlie.